Oh, it's my old friend, Scratchy Record. How are you, Scratchy Record? I haven't heard from you in so long. Oh, talk to me. Talk to me, Scratchy Record. Come on.
Did you enjoy the 2006 WFMU fundraising marathon, Scratchy Record? Why don't you talk to me? I'm sad now. I was so happy because WFMU made We'll talk all about that later. Hey, everybody, best show on WFMU. Back again, uninterrupted. The 2 weeks are over. The 50 weeks can resume. My uncle played on this record. Everybody, best show on WFMU back again for another Tuesday night installment. Things are back to normal here. The WFMU fundraising marathon is over. It's over. Now we can get back to normal. 201-209-9368. That's the only number I gives out now. I don't give out 800-999-9968. I was dreaming about that number. Haunted. But now, that nightmare has turned into a dream. And we reached our goal. So let me take this opportunity to say to you, thank you, everyone who pledged to this program and to WFMU. We surpassed our goal by $14,000, giving us great confidence for the year ahead. Your overwhelming support has left us utterly stunned. Didn't leave me stunned. I knew the best show listeners would come through. We did it. 82 one week, 13 the other week. Best show. It's a tentpole show. You people know it's a tentpole show. What am I telling you? I don't have to tell you guys a tentpole show. This station's a tent. This is a tentpole. You guys proved it was a tentpole show. It came out for the tentpole show. You guys helped raise the tentpole. So now the tent can stand mightily and proud for the next 50 weeks. Everyone who made a pledge during the marathon will receive a bill shortly. Mouse of Today pledgers and multiple pledgers will not receive their payment forms until the week of March 20th. If you have any questions or problems with your pledge once you've received it, you can email Listener Services Director Megan at Megan, M-E-G-A-N, at WFMU.org, or call her at 201-521-1416, extension 229. Thank you, everybody who pledged. Ah, we just heard from Guided by Voices. From Propeller, a.k.a. the best album ever. On the Tundra. Which flowed so nicely. That was our mellow set. That was us. We're ramping up here. We're starting off. Not gonna blow it out now. No, we're gonna build to it. Don't worry, people. This show's gonna blow it out tonight. It's gonna be top notch show. This is top notch show. This is top shelf. Tonight's show's a top shelf show. This is a show at the liquor store that's all the way on the top shelf covered with dust. This is the expensive stuff. This is not Michelob. This show's not Michelob tonight. No, this is top shelf. This show, you ask at the liquor store, ooh, how much does that cost? It's in a funny looking bottle. And the guy at the liquor store says, it's very expensive. I don't think you can afford it. With your flip-flops and your Salem cigarette t-shirt that you got for free. At a rock concert. And then you say, oh, well, excuse me. Perhaps you didn't know that I have one of these. And then you pull out your black American Express card that only the richest of the rich have. And the owner of the liquor store goes, I don't think that's a real American Express card. And you say, oh, let's test it out and see how much for that bottle. And he says, let's find out. And he wheels over one of those kind of shelves that you could climb up on, you know, the kind with the wheels on them. Wheels that over, climbs up on it. And then he turns around, and just like the movie Something Wild, you've robbed his cash register. Why did you do that? Why did you rob his cash register? That's right. On the chat, the Friends of Tom chat, you can always go to over at friendsoftom.com. That's the only chat I care to know about anymore. The other chats I've had dalliances with and visited. Those chats are for dirtbags. Lowlives. That's the chat I care about. Friendsoftom.com. You go to the Friends of Tom chat. Go to these other chats, you get mouth breathers. I got no time for mouth breathers. My audience is not an audience of... Might
want to nip that one in the bud. You might not want to go down that road.
There are some people in the audience that aren't mouth breathers. Now you know I'm teasing. My audience is actually the best audience I could ever ask for. You guys came through with flying colors for WFMU. And I really do truly appreciate it. Thank you for all your support for the last 2 weeks. Before Guided by Voices, we heard Higgins, a new CD by a band in New Jersey. It is hot stuff. It's a duo, two guys, Higgins. The record's called Dear Higgins, and we heard Drop Off. You're going to be hearing a lot more of Higgins on The Best Show and on other shows on the station, I'm sure. That's on the Magadee record label. Find out about them. You go to magadee.com. Magadee. Good stuff, guys. Thumbs up to Higgins. Before that, Elope from their No Name record that came out a year ago. They are a band from Sweden. The record is available in the U.S. on Parasol. We heard Anyone. And starting us off, George Harrison, a.k.a. the best Beatle from All Things Must Pass. We heard Beware of Darkness, again, a record my uncle Klaus played on. Very proud of him and his work. That's why I have the original artwork that he did for Revolver in my
vestibule in my house.
Did you know that, Mike? You didn't know I have the original Revolver artwork hanging in my vestibule? I don't know. You think it would be worth something? I should look into it. I always thought I could get maybe, like, in a pinch, a couple $100s for it. And it's signed by all the Beatles, too. (201) 209-9368. It's Open Phone Tuesday here on the Best Show on WFMU. We are in the post-marathon, the post-marathon afterglow, so to speak. Enjoying the victory that happened here. So now it is Open Phone Tuesday, and you are welcome to call in. We will return the show to its normal format. 201-209-9368. We should just get down to the magic, right? Just get down to it. Let's check the list of things we have planned here. Blah, blah, blah. Got that dude on Isaac Hayes. He quit South Park. Because he's mad. Because they made fun of Scientologists. Who cares? South Park bites. Those two guys are, I read an interview in GQ with those guys recently. That's right, Gentleman's Quarterly. I read. And they were like, they're kind of like libertarians, which means that they are Republicans who want to smoke pot. Right? Isn't that what that means? So they're like, oh, we don't believe in all this doom and gloom stuff about George Bush, that he's the worst. And you ever notice that those guys, all they complain about is, like, Hollywood? It's like they do that movie Team America, and then who are the bad guys in Team America? It's like, Hollywood. It's like, you know what? Maybe you guys should move out of Hollywood to get a little perspective on the way the actual rest of the country works. You know, the worst people are is Hollywood. Rob Reiner, he's the worst. Wait, no. Is Rob Reiner still alive? The rest of America could care less about Rob Reiner. But those guys, it's time, guys. You've completely lost all perspective. And they just, they're like those equal opportunity offenders. I like equal opportunity offenders. I like when that's somebody's goal. I'm an equal opportunity offender. Really? Really? Why? Why would anybody want to be an equal opportunity offender? Like, what's so proud about that? I ain't gonna go after everybody. Everybody's gonna get it from me. Like, who are you? Go back to Colorado, you stupid. Take your scissors with you, and your construction paper. Team America. I wanted to walk out. Like, I got it. I got it. It's marionettes doing dirty stuff. Yeah, it took 7 minutes for me to be tired. The movie was like 2.5 hours long. So I'm glad that guy quit on you, Isaac Hayes, even though he's a mutant. All of you, get off my, I almost took a page out of OCDJ's handbook with that one and almost said, get off my planet, which is his thing. Why isn't that my thing? It's still Gump. Get off my phone, get off my planet. I might have to annex that. We've been doing a segment called Factory Rap Douche of the Week here on the show, and I got an article sent to me by Teddy. You know Teddy. He's got the guitar, sings songs, political. You know Teddy. Ted Leo. So Teddy, only I can call him Teddy. So me and Teddy were talking the other day. Actually, no, we weren't talking. He sent me this article via email. It's from Salon.com. It's an article on Abercrombie and Fitch. Now, if you are somebody who is an Abercrombie & Fitch shopper, you could maybe call in while I read this article over at 201-209-9368. Mike is screening hard tonight. I've seen calls light up. I've seen calls get shot down. But if you are somebody who has opinions on Abercrombie & Fitch and would like to hear the article about the CEO of the company and can give me some insight, give me your stories about Abercrombie and Fitch. 201-209-9368. I'm tempted to say the other number, the 800 number. Do we have anybody to thank? Yeah. We got Bill in Ridgewood with an entry-level pledge. I want to thank him. Come on, people. We got this CD sitting here. Only two people in the running. Oh, the days of the marathon. I got to shake it off. I did three marathon shows last week. I got marathon shakes. Still got marathon. It's like flash, like a post-traumatic stress. No spike, huh? No spike. Guess he took the warning to heart. During the marathon, Spike was banned from the program for not going along with the game at hand. I wanted him to come down and host a show. And he was like, me. Maybe next year. Like, first of all, buddy, you might not want to plan on that. Start talking about next year's. The way the guy's living his life. He's one sticky dungeon door away from asphyxiation.
It won't open. It won't open. What am I gonna do? I'm stuck here with my Moonglows records.
So he was banned, and I respect it. He's not calling in. He's not gonna grovel. He did say he'd be back. I don't know. I think he's banned. I'd be willing to let him come in front of the court and plead his case. Any Abercrombie and Fitch people, Mike? Nope. No, huh? Because no one out there has an opinion on Abercrombie and Fitch, huh? Well, let me start reading this article that Salon wrote. It's called The Man Behind Abercrombie and Fitch. Mike Jeffries, the 61-year-old CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch, says dude a lot. He'll say, "What a cool idea, dude." Or when the jeans on a store's mannequin are too thin in the calves. "Let's make this dude look more like a dude." Or when I ask him why he dyes his hair blonde. "Dude, I'm not an old fart who wears his jeans up at his shoulder." This fall, on my second day at Abercrombie & Fitch's 300-acre headquarters in the Ohio woods, Jeffries, sporting torn Abercrombie jeans, a blue Abercrombie muscle polo, and Abercrombie flip-flops, stood behind me in the cafeteria line and said, "You're looking really A&F today, dude." Now please, just while I read this article, please keep in mind that this guy is 61 years old. Please, that might be an easy thing to lose sight of. But never forget what it means to be 61. Jeffrey's endorsement of my look was a step up from the previous day when I made the mistake of dressing my age, and the person writes here that their age is 30. I arrived in a dress shirt, khakis, and dress shoes, prompting A&F spokesperson Tom Lennox to look concerned and offer me a pair of flip-flops. Flip-flops? Yeah, take those shoes off, put flip-flops on. Where are you they're working with the flip-flops? I wouldn't be able to concentrate if I was in an office and everybody's wearing flip-flops. The slapping of flip-flops going up and down the hall. People walking around in their bare feet. They look at people's the hobbit feet. I don't want to see that. I'm trying to work. Just about everyone at A&F headquarters wears flip-flops, torn Abercrombie jeans, and either a polo shirt or a sweater from Abercrombie or Hollister, Jeffrey's brand aimed at high school students. When I first arrived on campus, as many A&F employees refer to it, I felt as if I stepped into a pleasantly parallel universe. The compound took 2 years and $131 million. $131 million to complete, and it was designed like nothing. It was designed so nothing in the outside world can be seen or heard. Jeffries has banished the cynicism of the real world in favor of a cult-like immersion in his brand identity. Maybe a chef can go get a job over at Abercrombie and Fitch. He'll go over there and just be like, "Hello, children." Do that voice over the PA. Over at Abercrombie and Fitch, be like, "Hello, dude. Hey, dudes. Just so everybody knows, Mike Jeffries is going to be in the cafeteria." Jeffries' employees are young, painfully attractive, and exceedingly eager, and they travel around the campus on playground scooters. On scooters. Stopping occasionally to chill out by the bonfire that burns most days in a pit at the center of campus. Bonfires. The outdoorsy summer camp feel of the place is accentuated by a treehouse conference room. A treehouse conference room? A barn-like building and sheds with gridded windows and a plethora of wooden decks and porches. But the campus also feels oddly urban and at times stark and unwelcoming. If I'm at work, no offense, I like work to be fun. Work should be fun. But work should be work also. Bonfires. I want opinions of Abercrombie and Fitch, 201-209-9368. Valued at $5 billion, the company now has revenues approaching $2 billion a year. Rolling in for more than 800 stores and 4 successful brands. For kids, there's Abercrombie, aimed at middle schoolers who want to look like their cool older siblings. For high schoolers, there's Hollister. a wildly popular surf-inspired look for, quote, energetic and outgoing guys and girls. That has quickly become the brand of choice for Midwestern teens who wish they lived in Laguna Beach, California. When the Hollister kids head off to college, Jeffries has a brand, the preppy and collegiate Abercrombie & Fitch, waiting for them. And for the post-college professional who is still young at heart, Jeffries recently launched Ruel, a casual sportswear line that targets 22 to 35-year-olds. Mike Jeffries is the Willy Wonka of the fashion industry. A quirky perfectionist and control freak, he guards his aspirational brands and utopian chocolate factory with a highly effective zeal. Those who have worked with him tend to use the same words to describe him: driven, demanding, smart, and intense, obsessive-compulsive, eccentric, flamboyant, and depending on who you talk to, either slightly or very odd. I would also include the word to describe him: flip-flop. Flip-floppy. What word would convey the fact that whenever he starts walking toward me, I hear the sound of flip-flops? Examples of his strange behavior abound. According to Business Week, at A&F headquarters, Jeffries always goes through revolving doors twice, never passes employees on stairwells, parks his Porsche every day at the same angle in the parking lot, keys between the seats, doors unlocked, and has a pair of lucky shoes he wears when reading financial reports. His biggest obsession, though, is realizing his singular vision of idealized all-American youth. He wants desperately to look like his target customer, the casually flawless college kid. And in that pursuit, he has aggressively transformed himself from a classically handsome man into a cartoonish physical specimen. Dyed hair, perfectly white teeth, golden tan, bulging biceps, wrinkle-free face, and big Angelina Jolie lips. It would be the kind of thing, yes, Chris L. on the chat, who can always be counted, he says, something flip-floppy this way comes. It would be great. It's like, that's the one good thing about flip-flops, is you would know when the boss was coming. If you're, like, goofing around in your office, be like, hey, let's check this video out here. Let's go to YouTube and watch these videos. And it's like, flip, 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 flip. Coming up the hall, it's like, we got about 45 seconds to go. Let's see. Remarkably little is known about Jeffries' personal life. There are a few people who claim to know Jeffries well, and those who do wouldn't comment for this story. What is known is that Jeffries has a grown son, lives separately from his wife, and according to Business Week, has a Herb Ritz photo of a toned male torso hanging over the fireplace in his bedroom. I mean, whatever. That's his business. Now here's where this guy, you might just say, okay, he's a little kooky. But here's where it gets kind of into the factory rabdouche category. Jeffries fidgeted nervously and grew visibly agitated when I asked him about several of many controversies and lawsuits he has weathered during his 14 years at the helm of A&F. Our first bump came when I mentioned the 2002 uproar over the company's thongs for middle school girls. Yuck. Thongs for middle school girls, which had eye candy and wink wink printed on their fronts. That was a bunch of bull, he said, sweating profusely. People said we were cynical, that we were sexualizing little girls. But you know what? I still think those are cute underwear for little girls. And I think anybody who gets up on a bandwagon about thongs for little girls is crazy. Just crazy. There's so much craziness about sex in this country. It's nuts. I can see getting upset about letting your girl hang out with a bunch of old pervs, but why would you let your girl hang out with a bunch of old pervs? Nice job not answering the question. Now, it's nice to know that the weird 61-year-old guy is going around complaining about old pervs. Here he comes, riding his scooter across campus. Oh, no. He's going to hit the bonfire. Somebody stop Mike. Bop, 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 bop. He also complains about because he also had that catalog that was discontinued, which was like dirty. It was like all dirty pictures of people wearing the clothes. And he got all mad because like gay guys wanted the catalog also because it was all all photos that were like tantalizing. Jeffries nearly fell over in exasperation when I mentioned the catalog. What they call a magalog. Although I'm not sure which charge. Number one, that he sells sex to kids, or that his advertising is homoerotic, bothered him more.
That is just so wrong, he said. I think what we represent sexually is healthy. It's playful. It's not dark. It's not degrading. And it's not gay. It's not straight. It's not black. And it's not white. It's not about any labels. That would be cynical, and we're not cynical.
Yeah, you know what's not cynical? I would say falling under the category of cynical would be marketing the pre-vert underwear for middle school girls. Eye candy, wink, wink on the front of underwear for little kids. Yeah, that's not cynical.
It's all depicting this wonderful camaraderie, friendship, and playfulness that exists in this generation and, candidly, does not exist in the older generation.
Oh, it doesn't exist in the older generation. Oh, you mean like the generation younger than you? You're one generation older than the older generation.
Yep. That's getting me mad.
When I ask him how important sex and sexual attraction are in what he calls the, quote, emotional experience he creates for his customers, he says, it's almost everything. That's why we hire good-looking people in our stores. Because good-looking people attract other good-looking people, and we want to market cool, good-looking people. We want to market to cool, good-looking people. We don't market to anyone other than that. As far as Jeffries is concerned, America's unattractive, overweight, and otherwise undesirable teens can shop elsewhere.
In every school, there are the cool and popular kids, and then there are the not-so-cool kids. Candidly, we go after the cool kids. We go after the attractive all-American kid with a great attitude and lots of friends. A lot of people don't belong in our clothes, and they can't belong. Are we exclusionary? Absolutely. Those companies that are in trouble are trying to target everybody. Old, young, fat, skinny. Then you become totally vanilla.
Yeah, because these clothes, the Abercrombie & Fitch clothes are so not vanilla. Yeah, those clothes are so street.
You don't alienate anybody, but you don't excite anybody either.
Yeah, that's not a cynical attitude. The idea of we're just going to market to good-looking people. For shame, you prevert. Right? 800, we're not the 800 number. 201-209-9368. I want Abercrombie and Fitch customers or people who hate them. to call in. Give me some insight into this. Give me some insight. Maybe it's just the price of success, but it's not a normal day in America if someone isn't suing or boycotting, or as he calls it, girl-cotting, Abercrombie and Fitch, which has become a lightning rod for both the left and the right. In 2004, Abercrombie & Fitch paid $40 million to settle a class-action suit brought by minority employees that said they were either denied employment or forced to work in back rooms where they wouldn't be seen by customers. Yeah, glad to see you're running a company that's not cynical. Glad to see you also don't want your company to be too vanilla. Put anybody of color in the back room. Jeffrey said the suit has taught him a lesson.
I don't think we were in any sense guilty of racism, but I think we didn't work as hard enough as a company to create more balance and diversity. And we have, and I think that's made us a better company. We have minority recruiters. And if you go into our stores, you see great-looking kids of all races.
Yuck. Come on. Anybody of a color, you're going to go now. 1 year, the guy fixes the company. In 2004, they settle the lawsuit. You know what? Why is this guy, if he's trying not to be cynical, why does he just embrace it? We sell stuff. We don't want people of color wearing our stuff. Just own it. In the latest episode, last fall, a group of high school girls from Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, made the rounds of television talk shows to protest the company's offensive T-shirts. Of particular concern were shirts that read, "Who needs a brain when you have these?" And, "Do I make you look fat?" The protest, which resulted in Abercrombie and Fitch pulling "Who needs a brain when you have these?" and "Gentlemen prefer Tig Ole Biddies," but retaining "Do I Make You Look Fat?" and others, began after my visit, so I couldn't ask Jeffries about it. But I did ask him about other T-shirt dust-ups, including "It's All Relative in West Virginia," which West Virginia's governor didn't find funny. "Bad girls chug, good girls drink quickly," which angered anti-addiction groups. And "Wong Brothers Laundry Service. Two Wongs can make it white." So he says, remarkably, Jeffrey says he has a quote, "morals committee for T-shirts, whose job it is to make sure this sort of thing doesn't happen."
"Sometimes they're on vacation," he admits with a smile. "Listen, do we go too far sometimes? Absolutely. But we push the envelope. We try to be funny, and we try to stay authentic and relevant to our target customer." Yes, that's right, your target customer, the young racist.
The market, send this stuff over to Dusseldorf, to Nazi Germany, right? This is Nazi wear. Allegedly. "What about," he says, "I don't care what anybody other than our target customer thinks." "What about shareholders?" Last year, aggrieved Abercrombie shareholders filed a suit against the company, alleging Jeffrey's compensation was excessive. The suit was settled. His $12 million stay bonus was reduced to $6 million, and he gave up some stock options. In 2004, he made approximately $25 million. This he says, Other suits still pending accuse Jeffries of misleading stockholders about company profits.
You settle because it's a distraction, Jeffries told me. I can't let anybody be distracted here, me included. We're passionate about what we do on a daily basis. And if any of us is tied up with this nonsense, it's counterproductive. We're a very popular company. We have a lot of money, and we're targets.
That's right. He's got to get the people. Got to get to work coming up with new racist T-shirts.
You know, we don't have any that go after Indians. What's going on? Let's get to work, guys. Somebody hand me that Hustler joke book. I think there might be at least a half dozen T-shirts in that.
Here's the final stretch of the article about the head of Abercrombie & Fitch. There was a mannequin in the Abercrombie & Fitch store where a male one decked out in jeans wasn't looking very manly.
We gotta fix that guy. We could stuff... Oh, wait.
What does he say here? I don't wanna... I hate this guy. I'm not even gonna read it anymore. I wouldn't be surprised if these Abercrombie & Fitch clothes had like a chip in the back of them, like Halloween 3. All of a sudden you're wearing them, all of a sudden one day the clothes are going to make your head melt. So therefore, I nominate Mike Jeffries, the head of Abercrombie & Fitch, the CEO, to be our factory rap douche of the week, ending, I don't know when this week ends. The week ending... What's that? No? What week? I don't know. What's this? If today is the week ending March 17th, 2006. This is WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope Worldwide on the World Wide Web at WFMU.org. Best Show back again for another Tuesday night installment.
Hello?
FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
Who's this? Oh, thank you for coughing.
Yeah, Sally.
Thanks for coughing in my ear.
Sally.
How's that feel? You like that?
No.
You don't even have headphones on. You don't know what that felt like. It was gross.
Sally.
I don't know what kind of germs you've got. What's your name?
Peter.
Oh, hey, Peter. How are you?
My name is Petey.
Oh, hey, Petey. How are you?
Goobs.
You're what?
Goobs.
Goobs?
Yeah, how are you, Tommy?
Ooh, brother. You sound, like you're going back to that,
Tom, how are you?
Doing all right.
It's good.
At least I was.
Okay. I'm very cold.
You're cold?
Looking for a sweatshirt. Sorry, Tommy. So anyway, Tom,
some fascinating talk going here. Looking for a sweater?
It's just like regular conversation.
What kind of sweater are you looking for? So maybe a hooded sweatshirt?
I was just trying to make conversation. Because we're buddies. So, well, you know how you talk about Abercrombie & Fitch?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a problem with them.
Yeah, what's your problem?
You know, they were like... sorry. Tom.
Yeah?
You know how they're making fun of the popular kids? I mean, they're making fun of their, like, the losers?
Yeah.
That's pretty mean. Because, you know, I see that a lot in my school.
What do you see?
Because they're like, the popular kids wearing Abercrombie & Fitch. You're all like, I'm so hot. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
You think they're so cool?
They do think they're cool.
then, like, then they make fun of other kids who don't wear Abercrombie & Fitch and Hollister.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, what do you wear?
I have a wardrobe of American Apparel.
American
and
Apparel?
And other stuff.
Okay.
And thrift store clothes.
And thrift store clothes? Where do you get the thrift store clothes from?
That place, Salvation Army. You know, Tommy?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What is your favorite shirt, Petey? Give us a little insight.
Wait, what, this shirt? Tom.
Yeah?
I don't have a favorite.
Get off my phone. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing all right. Who's this?
Can I give you a fake name?
Sure.
Judy.
Hey, Judy. How are you tonight?
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
I work in the fashion industry, and I'm thinking of, like, moving to Ohio to work. But now I don't think I want to work there because I was thinking of applying for a job there at A&F.
Really?
Yeah.
In what capacity?
As a technical designer.
Okay.
And I have friends that work there, and I work with people who've left there.
Uh-huh.
And
are they on that?
Pretty scary.
They're on that campus?
Yeah.
That campus sounds pretty creepy.
It does.
Riding around in a... So you want to ride around every day, go to work on a scooter?
No, and I don't also want to wear... I don't want to wear flip-flops around in the middle of the winter.
Wear flip-flops, hang out at the bonfire?
No, that's not for me. And I don't understand, like, that they haven't, like, jumped on the hip-hop culture thing. Why are they alienating black people?
Yeah, I guess it's because there's a lot of white people, and they want to keep their thing true to the master race.
Have you seen Polo ads recently? He's all over black people.
You need to teach me about fashion.
I'm boring. But anyway, I wanted to call in and give you a fashion.
Well, you're not boring. No. So are you not going to take the job?
Actually, I'm not quite there yet. I fell in love with a man from Ohio, and we're thinking of moving back.
So that might be the perfect fit for you.
Yeah.
I think you need to take it and then call in and give us reports.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
All right. Thanks,
take care,
Judy.
Tom.
Bye. There you go. First call of the show. Actually, it was the second call of the show, but we're going to say it was the first call of the show. Because that first Petey call, not so hot. I don't know what planet he was on. (201) 209-9368 is the number. Here on the best show on WFMU, we got we got to get to some theme song entries. Let's play some of the. We got the theme song contest going for the best show on WFMU. We got a few entries to play. Contest is going to be over in a few weeks. So if you've been thinking about entering the contest, now's the time. Just go to friendsoftom.com for information on the contest. FMU, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This is Dan calling from San Francisco. How are you, man?
All right. How are you, Dan?
Doing okay. I'm the guy who won the Sun Ra CD.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you for that. It's a good prize.
Oh.
I heard Petey talking about American Apparel.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, American Apparel is pretty creepy on its own. I don't know if you've seen the ads for that stuff.
Yeah, those are some creepy ads.
Do you know that the guy who runs the company takes those pictures himself?
Yeah, now they just got 60 times creepier.
Yeah, he insists on it. And, you know, out here in San Fran especially, you know, on the backs of the Guardians, you see these things all the time, and they're really bordering on the disgustingly sort of pornographic.
Yeah, I see the billboards in New York.
Oh, they got billboards in New York?
Yeah.
Awful stuff, man. So I would advise young Petey to stay away from the American Apparel.
Exactly. You know what I advise him to do? Do what I do. Osh, gosh, bagosh.
You can't go wrong.
Can't go wrong. I'll take him to Sears. I'll get him dressed up nice.
I think that'd be a great idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, hey, no problem. Hey, listen, one more thing, if I may.
Yeah, yes.
I'm a little excited about the Cannonball Run musical.
We're gonna get back to that soon.
Yeah, see, I'm going. I just moved out here to San Francisco. I'm going to New Jersey this weekend to pick up a lot of my stuff, my recording stuff, and my computer and things like that. So I'm going to be submitting some songs.
Okay. Well, when I'm ready.
Yeah. Hey, do you think it would be illegal or some kind of copyright infringement to do like a guitar version of the Chuck Mangione theme?
We're just goofing around on this thing, so just do it. It'll be fun.
Yeah, I think so too. I started learning it on guitar, so you know it's pretty easy.
It's not for profit. This is a Skylark. It's a bagatelle. We're having fun. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, thanks, buddy.
I'm going to email you some ideas, but thank you.
I love it. Thanks for pledging.
All right, man.
All right. FMU, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
Congratulations.
Are you going to do that voice?
Yes.
Then you're going to get hung up on. Was he doing that voice when he called, Mike? Of course not. Was he like, hey, can I go on the air and talk to Tom? Yeah. Then all of a sudden he's like, all right, I got past Mike. And he's like, all right, here we go. Funny voice time. Hello. Hello. When you hear that, after knowing you screened the guy fair and square, do you just go, oh, come on? Mike said yes. And thank you, Mike, for your help during the marathon. Let's hear some entries into the Best Show on WFMU theme contest. This first one is called Dawn of the Gomp. We're going to check it out right now.
Nothing more damning than the gomping.
Ah, there it is. Dawn of the Gomp. And that was sent in by... Dawn of the Gomp was submitted by Isothermal. Thank you, Isothermal, for your entry. Oh. Stop. The next entry in the theme contest is by... Oh, I think it might be by Isothermal again. Double dip in Isothermal. That is, let's check the rule book. Okay, let's check. We check here Section 5, Article 3 of the rule book. It is what we call the Petey's Father Rule. Considering the Petey's Father has submitted 75 entries into the contest, more than one entry is allowed. Let's listen to the Tuesday Night Stomp from Isothermal.
The best show on WFMU.
We bring entertainment here, packed with value.
Talk sharply.
Get off my phone!
best show on WFMU.
That was good. Isothermal.
I gotta give Isothermal some credit on that one.
The Tuesday Night Stomp. Isothermal coming through.
Heave-ho, two in a row. Heave-ho, two in a row.
The third entry tonight is by the band County Mountie have submitted a song, which we are going to check out in a matter of moments, as soon as the magical intro net brings it up to top speed, where it may be played over a computer. It is loading now. All right. Now this song is called Good Guys Win, Bad Guys Die. We're going to check it out now by County Mountie. This is these are entries in the Best Show on WFMU theme song contest. Let's check this one out.
Radios are battlefields in the fight for the good fight. Tuesday night, and the enemy turns the FM's dial to the right. Or the satellite. One man has the courage to fight the status quo. 91.1 tenth pole radio. The best show. Good guys win, bad guys die. Good guys win.
One more time!
The radios are battlefields in the fight for the good fight. Tuesday night, and the enemy turns the FM's dial to the right. Or the satellite.
Oh, good heavens. Good heavens. Now it's a contest! Now it's a contest! I can't believe what I just heard. I feel like I'm Rocky!
Now I know what it's like to have the guys from Survivor write a song about you. Now, a lot of these songs have been sent in via the internet. But today I received an envelope in the mail. A theme song entry. A compact disc. And they actually did it. It's actually written in... like what? Like with a? It looks like it's written with a fountain pen. Like, what do you call those pens you dip? Yes, like it's written with a quill. Now I'm a little nervous about this song because I just put the CD into the CD player, and it looks like it's 10 minutes and 33 seconds. Long. I don't know if I can have a theme song that long. They have the little artwork they did. It's called Tom's the Bomb. I say we just go right to it. Let's check it out here.
Okay, ready?
Well, you did pretty well with what I would call the vaudeville of the new century, Tom.
Station 10, the show's 10 Paul. 10, don't stand without 10 Paul.
What am I listening to?
Interest. That was the theme. That was great. Tom is the Bomb is that song. I'm interested in what...
Hello, wow. This is some cringy, grungy stuff here from the local Mawa community.
I'm terrified of what's on the rest of this CD, but I'm going to stop it there and say that is a hot batch of entries. Hot stuff, Jack. FMU, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Oh, all right. Who's this?
It's James in South Orange.
How you doing, James?
Good. I got a question for you, Tom.
Yes?
About the theme song stuff, because these are, like, good entries and all, but what happened to the old theme song?
It was retired.
Why was it retired?
Because I played it for a long time.
Really? Because, I mean, I've been listening for a long time, and that theme song was really, like, that was a theme song to the best show, you know?
You're absolutely right.
I think you should at least have it in the running, and maybe people would, like, vote for that to come back or something.
Oh, it's gone. It's gone. It's out of date. It's out of date.
Right. You know, it's a classic, like the show, you know?
You know what we're looking for now, though? New classics. We're looking for our Shawshank Redemption. New classics.
I guess, but I don't know. Maybe once in a while you can play that old theme song just during the show or something, you know? It'd be like a repeat, like it's in syndication.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. Good luck with the rest of the contest, though. You got some good entries.
Thank you. I believe we do also. Thank you for that.
Oh, and Tom.
Yes.
I loved your hoof and mouth piece.
Oh,
loved,
thank
loved
you.
Loved the meatloaf, man. That
was
awesome.
You're nice to say that. Did you see it or did you just hear it?
No, you know, and I just heard it because I didn't catch that one when I was watching on the web stream.
Mm-hmm.
But are they going to put the rest of those videos up like somebody did last year?
I don't know. I've already seen a link that somebody was floating
on the message board or something.
Something. Somebody was floating a link to it that I did not check out.
Okay.
But
right now there's just MP3s up, and I mean I listened to some of them that I didn't see, but
check around my message board.
Okay.
I think there was a URL for video. I did not check it out.
Tell Ken. Go, Ken. Get those videos up. Okay.
I think you might want to tell him, buddy.
Oh, no, but you got all the sway at the station. I know you run that place.
I got no sway. I don't run this place. I run the best show. That's all I do.
Ken, you say jump, and Ken says how high. I know how it works.
Sure, that's exactly how it
works. It's
the
10 pole. He can't ignore you.
201-209-9368 is the number. FMU, you're on the air.
Tom.
Yes?
It's Tomert.
Hey, Tomert, how are you?
I'm doing right. Let's just drop it.
Got past Mike all right?
Yeah, I got
no,
past
no,
Mike.
No drama?
His finger was a little twitchy on the drop button, apparently.
Now, what was your problem? We need to just figure out what it was before we can move on.
Well, that's what I originally said. Let's just drop.
Well, we do need to just address it. You made some pretty outrageous statements, and I think I'm ready to drop it too, but we should just figure out what it was. You called during week one of the marathon with about 15 or so minutes left in the show when I was going for my final push down the home stretch.
Final push.
Yes.
Right.
And then you called asking to be put on the air.
Okay. Well, what's earlier, I believe I heard you say, let's take some callers, you know, let's give the people a reason to want to pledge, you know, what the show's originally about, you know, getting calls and talking, conversations, stuff like that. Now, I had something that I wanted to bring up and talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Originally,
okay.
I was going to call and say about how, you know, WFMU, listening just to all the pledges, listening to all the different people from all around, you know, the world, all around the United States, pledging to a show in New Jersey, in Newbridge, and just listening to that made me think about, you know, what you do to people and how you bring people together on one single radio station that we have been introduced to on the internet or whatnot, and we still contribute to it as to where we could actually pledge money and contribute money, you know. I want to talk about this kind of stuff, but before I could get to any of that stuff, Mike starts asking me, well, do you have a checking book? You know, do you have this or that? You know, apparently, it seemed like the show wasn't that important anymore. It was about how much money you could just grab fast money. Fast money was what it seemed like.
You want to know what, though? You are 100% right. It was about grabbing money. It's the fundraiser. It's the marathon.
Oh, okay. Of course. Yeah, no, I completely understand. And I gave my reason. He asked me, why, you know, have you pledged? And I said, well, I'm going to pledge tomorrow because my father was sleeping at the time and I did not want to use my credit card. And I didn't want to wake up my dad and like, give me your credit card. I want to pledge the radio station.
No, well, you didn't have to.
And I pledged. And I did pledge.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know,
I appreciate it.
But, you know, I got upset with Mike because he's like, you know, I'm like, hey, listen, I want to talk to Tom. And he's just like, well, you know, if you don't want to wake up your dad, you can get a checking book and all that stuff. And
but you want to know what, though, Mike is...
And then he's like, well, are you high? And I'm just like, what is... I mean, come on.
Do you want to come in here, Mike? You know what it is, though? Mike is the gatekeeper. Mike has the...
No, I understand. Mike knows. I respect Mike. I call... You know, I talk to Mike before I talk to you. You know what I mean? Like, I respect Mike, but that, that just... What is there to respect?
What's that?
What is there to respect when that's what... Is that really who Mike is? Is that who you are, Mike?
All I know is that you didn't tell me any of that stuff about your father being asleep. You know,
are you kidding me?
This is the first time I'm hearing that.
Are you kidding me?
I remember your
call. Do we have an archive of the screening by any chance?
Actually, no, we don't. There's not an archive of everything that happened.
Well, we better get it because I'm positive. I definitely said that.
Well, I said
I definitely said that. That's why you brought up the whole checkbook. You know, that's why
I didn't mention anything about a checkbook. All I said was that we were in the middle of the marathon, and that it would be a good idea to, you know, do a pitch.
Well, you know the truth, right?
I know the truth. That's why I came in here.
Yeah, you know the truth. But anything you say, whatever you say, it doesn't matter. Because you know the truth. I know the truth. We know what was said. We know what was discussed. Whatever's said on air, you know, all these people are listening. It doesn't matter. You know what happened. I know what happened. And that's that. That's enough for me. You know, not me apologizing, not you saying, I don't want an apology from you. You don't have anything to apologize about.
You hear that, Mike? You don't have to apologize to Tom Ernst.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Are you relieved?
Yeah, I'm relieved about that.
Yeah, it's all okay. I have no grudge. And, yeah, I don't know.
I'm glad
listen, I don't want to start any problem with that. Like, I have no problem, but, like, you know, I learn more and more about people just by talking to them, and that was my conversation with you, Mike. That was it. I talked to you, Tom. I talked to you, you know, I tried to call in, and I tried to have a conversation with you. And,
you want to know what, Tomer?
Maybe I'm just rambling.
You want to know what, buddy?
Jabber.
You want to know what? I got to say, I agree with you on this one.
I'm sorry.
I agree with you on this one.
Mike was giving you a hard time? Hustle bustle.
So, honestly, was Mike giving you a hard time about getting on the air?
It wasn't about necessarily getting on the air. That's not a big deal. Do you know how many times I've called and Mike is just like, hey, listen, you know, this or that? I'm just like, I'll call. Mike knows. I was like,
but wait,
right,
did Mike not show you the respect that you should be shown?
Oh, I deserve no respect. It's not about respect. It's just, all right, maybe I shouldn't have said that, but it's not about deserving respect or not. It's just that I know Mike a little better, and now this is what I know of him. And, you know, I don't approve, because it's just like, it just seemed like...
What don't you approve of Mike's character?
I can't find the word.
You think you have you do have some insight into Mike's character now?
No, it's not... It's just that, like, it was not nice of you, Mike. It was not a nice thing to do, you know.
I gotta say, I'm with Tomert on this one.
Well, I don't know where I went
wrong. I'm sorry,
wrong.
Mike. I don't
will
want
you,
people
Mike,
against
will
you,
man. Apologize to Tomert?
No, I don't want an apology. Don't even. If you apologize, I'll be upset.
No, I'm not. I'm not going to apologize.
Yeah, don't
apologize.
Don't
I want you to apologize to him.
Stop.
Say Tomert, I'm sorry.
No way.
No way, yeah.
All right, you guys. Oh, it's like a little bit of a grudge match here. You're in Florida, Tomert, right?
Oh,
would you be willing to come up here and arm wrestle Mike to settle this?
No, I don't know if I can. I mean, if you want to pay for some airfare, maybe. I'm down. I'm down to go look at you.
I'll pay for some air. I'll fly
you
up.
I've never been to New Jersey.
I'll fly you up.
No, you wouldn't.
Give me, what's your...
What's my what?
Do you have a secret select number for Florida Airlines?
What are you talking about?
Like the code number.
I don't even know what that is, so no.
Do you fly Florida Air? You're in Florida, right?
Yeah, I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
So what's Florida Air?
It's the airline. Why don't I give you some info? You can fly it.
You're seriously going to give me money to fly over there at arm wrestle Mike?
I'm thinking about it.
Hmm. And so am I.
Would you do it? If I paid for the ticket, would you fly up here?
I'm a kid, man. I'm a teenager. I don't know. You know.
What's that mean?
Well, because, like, you know, I have, you know, at my age, I have
chickening out.
I have barriers. I have things that I have hurdles.
You're chickening out. That's fine. You want to chicken out? That's fine. Mike's flexing.
Oh, no. Let me explain.
There he goes. He just showed.
Let me explain. Well, let me look.
Well, I'll bring you and your dad up here. How about that?
Hey, don't mic out on me. Don't mic on me now. Listen. Listen. Just listen. I have.
Okay, I can't take that anymore. Florida air. Even I was starting to, like, lose my sense of anything. I was like, yeah. My head was being, like, drawn to his level. I was starting to lose it. I was starting to just, like, you go Florida air. Tom, in all seriousness, I like you, buddy. You know you're welcome to call anytime. You keep calling. You are a friend of Tom. I just had to nip that segment in the bud. What else we got going on here? You know what I didn't get to talk about last week, last couple weeks, were the Oscars, because obviously the marathon intervened. So I really was not able to go over the things. I didn't see Crash. I kind of don't have a whole lot of interest in that. I liked Good Night and Good Luck a lot. And, I mean, it comes down to... it's just a weird Oscars. Kind of not so satisfying. I thought Jon Stewart was okay. You know, I've always kind of been... As far as movie stars go, you can kind of make a case that George Clooney is one of the few, like, movie stars left over, in a way. He had that whole... he won, and I thought his speech was, like, a little... I don't know, kind of a little hokey. Kind of like very, very what you'd expect from him in a way. Kind of making it about a thing rather than just about the award. Now he's talking all about how, you know, kind of taking on how Hollywood is removed from the American mainstream, as it is referred to by a lot of conservative talk show hosts. And where do I have it here? I have his quote. So he says, "We are a little bit out of touch in Hollywood every once in a while. It's probably a good thing. This Academy, this group of people gave Hattie McDaniel an Oscar in 1939 when blacks were still sitting in the backs of theaters." It really just felt like a little preachy. Just talking about how Hollywood is on the forefront of all of these issues, and it shouldn't be a night about that, in my opinion. It should kind of be a night about being thankful for the award,
You're glad you won. You appreciate it. You really I just am not into those guys using that as a huge platform. Especially a guy like that who kind of seems like he's cut from a different cloth, like he's a movie star. And then now he's kind of just going down this road where he's just doing what's a little bit expected of actors to take the stand and have to make a point that you can't just be an actor for a night. You have to be bigger than that. I thought there was some funny stuff on the show. I thought that Jon Stewart's whole thing when he was talking about Scientology was funny. That was one of my favorite moments. Him just doing the thing, pretending that he didn't know they were back from commercial. Moments like that made it worth it. The political campaign ads that they had shown throughout. But it was kind of an uneventful show when it's all said and done. It really felt like, how many times have you seen that stuff? I don't know. Maybe those shows just really don't do it for me. But this one in particular kind of stuck in my craw a little bit. FMU, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, it's Trent from L.A.
Hey, Trent.
Got to take you to task a little bit for the Clooney stuff. I don't know.
What do you mean?
Well, he's right.
What do you mean he's right?
Well, I mean, would you not agree that Hollywood and the Academy have been at the forefront of promoting social change and exposing injustice? I mean, this been going on for decades, just like he said.
Well, like, give me some examples if you think that was such a relevant point.
Jeez. Take 2005, you know, the most recent batch, you know, of nominees, you know, Brokeback Mountain. I mean, that's taking on and addressing, you know, homosexual issues, you know, Crash, racial stereotyping, and you know, the fallout that results from that, you know. And I mean, going back to, I mean, The Searchers, you know, racial prejudice, again, sexism, you know.
Uh-huh.
On the waterfront.
Okay.
I mean, that totally mirrored the political climate of the early 50s and, you know, union corruption, that sort of thing. Schindler's List, surely you've seen that.
Uh-huh.
Cuckoo's Nest, you know, the plight of these, you know, wards of the state, for lack of a better term, and, you know, them trying to find meaning, you know, in their lives. And, I mean, that's all on the silver screen. I mean, you know, sure, Hollywood can entertain, but it can also, you know, it's a mirror. You know, I mean, I'm a fan of your show, and I've heard you say that, you know, you're a mirror, and Hollywood's a mirror, but it also, you know, it's a tool, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Movies can be a tool, and, you know, I mean, West Side Story, you know, I mean, that's, I know a lot of people say that, look at that as fluff, you know, but it's about the, you know, the taboos, forbidden love, you know, between two, you know, people that think they shouldn't be together, but they are, you know, through all
uh-huh.
all the, you know, the struggle, you know.
Kind of like
Chicano and, you know, and white, and, you
mm-hmm.
know, they make it happen, you know. So basically, you know, to cut to the chase, I just wanted to say I think you're wrong, and Hollywood does have a heart, and it does try to make a difference, and as far as I'm concerned, it does set the pace. And,
that's fair enough.
I
didn't think about the weight of those issues and
yeah.
kind of taking them on in their respective times.
Yeah.
That's fair. Those are fair points.
Okay, and I wouldn't, I'd be saying it even if I wasn't a member of the Academy myself. So, but great show. I just want to say thank you.
You're a member of the Academy, like the Motion Picture Arts and Sciences?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So you get to vote on all the awards?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm a writer, producer, director. You know.
Really?
Yeah. That's not even why I was calling. So.
And what was your first name?
Pardon me?
What's your name?
Trent L. Strauss.
Huh.
Yeah.
I guess if you said writer, director, producer?
Yeah.
Like what kind of stuff have you done that you know, like I would have seen or people listening would have seen?
Ooh, well, I mean if they've gone to the theater in the last whatever 15, 20 years, I'm sure they've seen it, or if they rented it, you know, if they frequent their video rental place, you know, I'm sure you've seen some of it. What have I done?
Yeah, like what kind of things have you done? Like what?
Well, you know, in like a writer, producer, director capacity, stuff you've probably seen, Face Peelers 1 through 4 and 6, and Trails 2 of the Gouging, Dr. Sleaze, Nurse Sleaze, The Hacksawist, You're Soaking in Her, Blood Puddles, The Ooze 3, Coach Fennell's Revenge, Splattered Dreams, The Kidney Thieves, It's Raining Membranes, what else? Art School Arsonist, It Eats, Pukadelphia, Cub Scout Serial Killer, Boy Scout Serial Killer, Weeblow Serial Killer, Girl Scout Serial Killer, Gut Bomb 2003, stuff like that.
Wow. But you're in the Academy.
Yeah.
But those are like slasher films.
Please don't. Don't, okay?
I mean, I always thought guys like who made movies like that didn't have a chance in hell in getting in the Academy.
We don't like to use the term slasher film or exploitation film or gore film.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, so just let's sideline that. We like to call this, you know, our genre is extreme cinema.
Extreme cinema.
Yeah.
So that kind of encapsulates the movies like that you just named.
Well, yeah, and it's. I mean, see, I can already sense in your voice that you think, you know, like you think ill of it, or you're it's beneath you and your thing.
Uh huh. Well,
it's not.
I mean, personally.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want me to be completely?
Yes.
First of all, I appreciate you talking honestly with me and kind of addressing the fact that your movies may not be as critically respected or you know looked at as highly as other movies. I mean, I personally, if I'm being completely honest here, movies like that. Just kind of, I look at those as maybe being, when they're really exploitative, I look at them as being part of the problem a little bit. Like, they really just are meant just to be gruesome and gross, and I honestly don't know what they do other than give people, you know, nightmares.
See, that's what I've been up against, you know, for 15 years or so. I mean, from my standpoint, I'm doing the same thing as you know the guys that directed those great films I mentioned earlier. You know,
like what movies?
You know, Spielberg, Schindler's List, Kazan on the Waterfront. You know, Ford with The Searchers, that sort of thing. You know, I'm like, take Dr. Sleaze.
Uh huh.
Dr. Sleaze is black.
So.
Well, I would like to think that we broke the color barrier on that one. You know, I don't think until Dr. Sleaze there had ever been a black sadistic doctor serial killer in a movie.
So he's like a crazy doctor.
He's insane, yeah. And so is Nurse Sleaze.
Which you also named as one of your movies.
Yeah.
That's like a spinoff?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So just because you have a person of color, like, killing people,
that makes him somehow, like, that's like breaking down racial barriers?
Well, it's beyond that. I mean, take the Hacksawist. The Hacksawist was gay. Leon.
What in the movie? I didn't see the Hacksaw. The Hacksawist?
Yeah, you didn't see it?
I didn't see the Hacksawist.
Okay.
What made him kill? Like, what was his... Did it happen?
Well, he's a street hustler, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, just kind of getting, you know, getting ripped off a lot and that sort of thing. And he's got these sort of visions of you know, his awful mother haunting him, you know,
uh-huh.
when he's out on the street in his little tight satin shorts. And geez, you know, that'll drive anyone to saw people's legs off and their faces.
Well, that first of all, that sounds a little offensive. You have a gay character who's...
it's empowering.
But you're saying he's in tight satin shorts.
Well, that's how they dress out there.
Who's they?
You know, the lady boys on the streets.
Okay, so yeah, so you're really...
Okay. Let's go beyond the Hacksawist, okay?
Okay.
Girl Scout serial killer. Kimmy is a girl.
Who's Kimmy?
She's the lead character in that. She having a real problem with her scoutmaster, Sharon.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of touches off this thing where she just goes on, like, this spree.
She goes on a spree?
Yeah, it kind of makes I Spit on Your Grave look like Amelie.
Oh, I definitely would want nothing to do with that movie. No offense.
Well, my films have been called the bravest in Hollywood. Like, take Entrails 2, The Gouging.
Uh-huh.
That film holds the record for the most blood ever in one scene.
And how much blood was that?
32,000 gallons.
32,000 gallons?
Yeah.
And what were you using as the blood? Like that Karo syrup?
Exactly, yeah.
People always talk about. But yeah. Where did you get 32,000 gallons? What is that?
It was about a third of the budget.
But where do you even store 32,000 gallons?
A truck.
Okay, a truck. So you had a truck full of...
Yeah, and then we hook it up into this big kind of pump. I don't want to ruin the Hollywood magic of it for any of your listeners, or for you, because you'll see it someday.
Uh-huh.
You know?
But
there's like a big pump, and it just like it's like shoots out of this like basically a water cannon.
And it's coming from one person?
No, there are about 42 people, and they're kind of on like this large skewer.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and then
that's disgusting.
Yeah, and they're all sort of getting at the same time. It's magic. You got to see it. It was
really,
banned in Europe.
It was banned in Europe.
Yeah, a lot of Netflix have been banned in Europe.
And that's Europe, which is pretty liberal with a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
all of Europe.
I thought so.
All of Europe.
Belgium's been pretty good.
Okay.
But that's about it.
Wow. Well, I got to tell you, I have no interest in seeing...
Well, really? Wait till you hear about this.
What's that?
Well, it's my latest film. I just wrapped.
Uh-huh.
It's going to be My Citizen Kane.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, is it in the same vein as these other movies?
It is sort of, but it's like nothing you've ever seen from the extreme cinema genre.
Uh-huh.
It's gonna wow everybody. It's called The Tool Belt Killer.
The Tool Belt Killer.
Yeah.
And what is the?
Well, what makes it different to begin with is that this baby's it was shot on 35.
35 millimeter.
Yeah.
So the other ones weren't.
Well, most of them were on 16. Some were on 8 and Super 8.
Uh huh.
Okay. On video.
Okay, so this one you did full on though.
We did it full on. I mean, this is I'm gonna garner awards. I mean, I'm not gonna go out and say it right now. Awards are, I will be reaping them. I mean, this is in a nutshell. It's like Phantom of the Opera meets Norma Rae, but with way more impalings and beheadings.
Okay, so wait, I gotta wrap my head around that for a second.
Yeah.
Norma Rae
meets
what?
Phantom of the Opera.
So Norma Rae meets Phantom of the Opera with beheadings.
Yeah.
Now, what is the plot, if you don't mind, of...
Well,
I mean,
I don't want to give a lot away, okay?
Sure, no, I understand that completely, since the movie's not out yet.
Okay. Basically, it's the story of a young man, Brian, and he lives in a really poor town.
Okay.
And he's shunned by all his, you know, all his classmates. It takes place at the end of his senior year. You know, he's out of school. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they shun him just because he's different, you know. And so he gets out, and he's working that summer at Lowe's. You know, what Lowe's is?
Sure, it's like a Home Depot type home center.
Exactly. So he's stationed in the lumber department.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so he's trying to do his job, you know, like a good guy. And he gets kind of taunted by all these kind of burly contractors, you know, who come in to buy their lumber and their bricks and their whatever, their masonry supplies, that sort of thing. Just because he's different.
Uh-huh. What, his name was Brian?
Yeah.
How is Brian different?
Well, he's rich.
Okay.
His is the only rich family in this town.
Uh-huh.
And his dad actually owns most of the businesses in the town.
Uh-huh.
And the dad got rich when he invented this new kind of, like a corrosive agent that strips paint off of metal.
Okay, I'm kind of missing how this makes him, how he's being ostracized.
Oh, well, a lot of the people in the town hate Brian and his family, you know. Basically, one of the big reasons is the fact that 75% of the kids in town are addicted to huffing paint begone.
Uh-huh.
And also, Brian's dad has kind of run out most of the small business owners in town.
Uh-huh.
And he's also a philanderer.
Okay.
And he's also the mayor. So he kind of runs everything.
So, but again, okay, I appreciate all those details, but how does that make him, because he's rich in a town full of poor people?
Everyone
he's
else
somehow,
is poor, so they kind of shun him.
But he's rich. Well, that doesn't exactly, that's a little weird.
Well, that's how it was for me growing up.
So you grew up in a town full of poor people?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people can identify with that.
And you were like the rich?
Yeah.
So
this is not about me. It's about the story. It's about the craft. Okay.
Okay. So, all right. Let's get. It's is all about the movie. What is it called? Tool Belt Killer.
The Tool Belt Killer.
Okay.
Okay. So Brian's dad, he wants Brian to work at the Lowe's
mm-hmm.
this summer, so he'll know what it's like to have a manual job, a manual labor, before he goes to college.
Okay.
Yeah. So one day Brian's driving the forklift. And he's getting this big pallet of cement bags off this big shelf, you know, with one
uh-huh.
of those big, you know, forklift things. And this one jerky, fat contractor,
uh-huh.
he's the one that's really pressing his buttons and the order's for him. So somehow one of the tongs on the forklift starts to give way.
With all the...
All the stuff on it.
Yeah.
And the pallet comes crashing down onto the forklift, and there's this huge cloud, like this plume of dust everywhere.
Sure.
You can't see anything. And then right then, lightning strikes the very spot where that happens. Like, lightning goes through the roof of the Lowe's. And, like, Brian's killed, right? He's dead.
Wait. There's an accident with these bags of cement.
Yeah.
And he gets buried underneath them, like it collapses on him.
We think so, yeah.
And then you said something about lightning?
Isn't that weird? It's like supernatural.
So the thing gets hit by lightning?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's all purpley, like when the lightning hits and it's like purple and like, oh, it looks great. It looks
okay.
great. Okay. But, so he's killed, right?
Uh-huh.
Or is he?
Well, I'm going to assume no, he's not.
The body wasn't ever found. And this is where the story really takes off.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so he's horribly disfigured, but alive. And what happened is he slinks off while all the dust is happening, you know, and everyone's going wild.
Uh-huh.
He goes into the bathroom,
and he takes his first look into the mirror, like, and sees what he looks like.
Sure.
And it's shocking.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to give away what he looks like, but he's mucho disfigured.
Because of this accident that he got caught up in.
I mean, how would you look if a pallet of, you know, like 1,000 pounds of cement bags landed on you?
Sure. But he's lucky, and he got hit by lightning.
Exactly, yeah. So he's shocked. I mean, it's like life is over.
Yeah. I should say we are joined by, your name was Trent?
Trent L. Strauss, yes.
Okay, a filmmaker who's kind of giving us some insight into his new movie. So thanks for that. Oh. So I
didn't intend for it to be this involved, but I mean,
well, no, this is very interesting. I appreciate you talking.
Of course. I hope everyone comes to see the Tool Belt Killer when it's released. So anyway, he's just mortified what he looks like, and he knows his life is over as he knows it. So he lives in the walls of the Lowe's.
This guy, Brian.
Yes.
And does he become the Tool Belt Killer?
Well, eventually. He survives on coffee and toast cheese.
Which is food that's around the
in
Lowe's.
In the vending machines, yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so here's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Belty, that's what Brian becomes.
Okay.
When the store's closed,
uh-huh.
He fashions himself this new outfit.
Yeah?
He's so disfigured that he makes himself a mask out of duct tape and sandpaper, and then also like a suit out of fiberglass insulation.
Uh-huh.
It looks incredible. It's so creepy. And the coolest part of his whole new thing, this insane tool belt that he makes.
Yeah, what's the tool belt
about?
Well,
it's full of these modified screwdrivers, hammers, hatchets, pliers, little saws from around the store, and he's modified them, so now they're these horrific implements of death and torture.
Uh-huh.
And he also grinds his fingers into keys with the key maker.
Oh, God.
It's such a sick scene.
Oh,
there's like marrow spurting. It's great.
Oh, that's so disgusting.
Oh, my God, it's great. So basically, Belty, he takes revenge on everybody he hates and also their families. You know, just killing everyone and grinding up everything and wood chippers, and it's
uh-huh.
great. Basically, he lures all the families and all the people that he hates to Lowe's with these fake coupons he's printed up.
Uh huh. What do you mean, like a fake coupon?
Well, it's these coupons that he's made, and they tell the person, you know, who they're mailed to come around the back entrance of Lowe's at closing time for a free patio set. And they all fall for it, and they all get, you know, sliced and diced.
So, I'm sorry, this is just nuts. I'm just like, this sounds
like... It's a great story, don't you think?
great might not be the first word I would come to mind, but... So he sends us these coupons that trick families into thinking they're going to
get... They look really pro. Like he's Photoshopped them. There's like a Photoshop thing in Lowe's in the office. I mean, he's got free run of the place after it closes.
Yeah. So he pretty much is luring these families to the thing, and then he just attacks the families?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So,
oh, but I forgot something that's... super crucial to this. That's very interesting.
Uh-huh.
Early in the movie, it's also revealed that the Lowe's was built upon this ancient Viking burial ground.
A Viking burial ground.
Yeah, and he actually Brian Belty finds one of those horn hats, and that becomes part of the outfit too. And this will play into the story later.
Well, where does he find a horn hat?
Just in the walls.
How would it get into the walls, though?
I don't know. I mean, it's been there forever. I guess when they were building the thing, and it kind of jostled stuff, and the horn hat got wedged up in the walls when they were doing sheetrock or something.
So
totally plausible.
Somehow you're expecting... So it jostles the horns up.
The horn hat, yes.
Out of the ground.
It's a horn hat.
Yeah. No, I'm aware. It's a horn hat. It jostles it up, out of this burial ground, somehow up into the walls of a current construction.
I've heard of it happening. We had a guy doing research, and he said it's plausible.
Okay, so he is he wearing the horn hat?
Oh yeah, over the sandpaper and the tape. It's great.
So is he like possessed by the Vikings?
Oh God, no! Come on, that comes a little later.
Okay.
So basically, I don't want to ruin too much of this, but I can't not tell what I know because I'm so excited about it.
So is this the whole movie?
No, there's so much more.
So okay. This is just you setting up the premise for the
movie. Well, I'm jumping around. I'm giving away a little bit, but I mean, I've been working on this thing for a year, so I'm just so excited about it. And there's this big showdown at the end.
So what is the movie? What is the movie about? The bulk of the movie is him attacking a family or something.
Well, there's this touching love story that also comes into play. Okay.
Uh huh.
Okay, so Belty, I mean Brian.
You keep calling him Belty.
Well, Belty, you know, that's like, you know, in the Chainsaw Massacre, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, you have nicknames, you know, like,
uh-huh.
like Freddy and et cetera. So it's like, he's Belty.
Okay.
And Belty's going to be huge, too, but I don't want to get ahead of myself. So there's this touching love story. When Brian was in high school, he had this crush on this girl, Monica,
mm-hmm.
but she wouldn't talk to him.
Okay.
Just because he was from across the tracks, you know. He lived in a mansion across the tracks, and you know she felt weird also because her mom and dad worked in Brian's mansion and as you know as maid and groundskeeper. So she felt weird about that, you know. And Brian's dad treated her parents horribly, you know, on the job.
Uh huh.
Well, you know, he'd make them watch him make love to these filthy.
Ugh.
Prostitute.
Ugh,
it's a great scene. It's sort of funny the way we shot it. But
well,
anyway,
that doesn't sound funny.
Well, it is. You gotta see it. Anyway, so at one point in the movie, Monica comes into Lowe's just as it's closing,
mm-hmm.
and she needs these light bulbs.
Okay.
And Belty is kind of he sees this, and there's hardly anyone at the store, so there's no one around to see it really.
Uh huh.
So he summons up the courage to talk to her. And amazingly, she's not turned off by his looks. She actually likes him.
Really?
And she doesn't know it's Brian, though. That's the thing. This guy that she shunned in high school. And as time goes on, there's this beautiful montage where things escalate. And, you know, she comes to visit Belty after hours, and they make love several times. And every time is depicted in the film quite graphically.
Ugh.
In a nice way. But then one night, Monica comes in and she tells Belty that her dad got this great new job
uh-huh.
in Western Maine, and the whole family's moving in a week. A week.
Okay.
So he's devastated. So what does he do?
Uh-huh.
He lures her family, minus Monica, to Lowe's with this special coupon that he mails to their house. Basically, a patio set for mom, dad, and little brother.
Uh-huh.
And guess what happens to them?
Probably what I thought happened to them the second you mentioned this idea, which is it's just them getting attacked.
Well, yeah, I mean really attacked. So anyway, later that night,
uh-huh.
Belty sits down with Monica. She
yeah.
has no idea what's happened.
Yeah.
For this, you know, for their traditional breakfast, because it's at like 6 a.m., you know, cause
so,
it all happens during the closing hours.
Uh-huh.
Before it opens. So it's like 6 a.m. and everything's going great until Monica takes this bite of her omelet.
Uh-huh.
And she suspects something's wrong. And then, you know, she sees her father's face.
You mean like the ghost of the father? Like
no.
like hallucinating?
No, his face is in the omelet. Belty cut it off with a hacksaw.
Oh, God.
He got revenge on the whole family.
Well, what?
They were trying to take away the one thing he loved.
Yeah, well, maybe Belty could leave the Lowe's.
How could they do that to Belty?
What? You keep calling him Belty like he's the hero.
He is the hero.
How? No. See, this is the problem I have with these horror movies.
Ugh.
You have this. What? So the family is the villains?
Of course they are, because they tried to take away the one thing that he loves, and they're so boring and poor.
So they're born. So pretty much you're saying the family is guilty.
They are guilty. So is everyone else who picked on him just because he was rich.
No one picks on rich people, first of all.
Oh, they certainly do. Ask. I speak from experience. Anyway, you should see that Monica realizes at that point what's happened, and she's got to kill Belty or become his belt bride.
Uh-huh.
And there's this long fight scene that ends up carrying over into every department in the store. Lighting fixtures, plumbing, sheetrock, lawn care. It's insane.
So this is just this huge fight that goes on between
Belty,
because the family is dead now.
Exactly. And the most gruesome scene happens in the kitchen section.
Uh-huh.
Belty's trying to gouge Monica in the eye with one of his screwdrivers.
Yeah.
But she gets loose and puts Belty's arm into the garbage disposal. And
yeah.
He's caught. And he's really caught. And then she summons all of her strength and all of her anger. It's so empowering. And she manages to put his entire body into it and hits puree, and he gets pureed.
Uh-huh. So that's the end of Belty.
No.
No?
No.
How is that not the end of Belty?
Well,
you got me calling him Belty.
See?
So,
you love him.
So that's the end
America
of
America will fall in love with Belty.
That's the end of this sick serial killer.
Hell no, it's not. You know why?
Why?
Because just as he's about to take his last breath of air,
uh-huh,
Belty calls on the Viking spirits.
Yeah.
And they help him.
And what happens then?
Well, then he gets all this Viking strength.
Uh-huh.
And he chases Monica throughout the store with one of those old lawnmowers, you know, the ones that they're not even, like, motorized. They have the blades that you can see going round and round.
Like the old-fashioned push mowers?
Exactly.
Yeah?
You see, like, old dumb people using them?
Yeah, old dumb people. Or poor people.
Oh, poor people especially, yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, I guess to you that's all the same, though.
Okay. Come on, you're putting words in my mouth. So she's running away and she falls.
Is it, though? Is it?
Pardon me?
Are they the same?
Dumb people and poor people?
Yeah.
I didn't say that.
Well, I'm asking you a question. In your mind, are they?
No. I mean, dumb people and poor people buy my movies, too.
Oh, so you like them for that?
I love them for that.
Uh-huh.
You would, too, if you were me. So anyway, Monica falls.
Uh-huh.
And he's got her cornered in the saw department.
Yeah.
And there's this huge, oversized chainsaw on display. Like, kind of like, you know, one of those display things, but it's, like, massive.
Sure.
But it works.
Yeah.
I don't want to ruin
it. How big?
It's, like, 5 feet long.
Okay.
It's huge. So I don't want to ruin it, but let's just say I outdid entrails to the gouging on this one.
So Belty now kills the woman he loved.
He's got to. She was trying to kill him.
Graphic.
Because I might get kicked out of the Academy again for this one.
Again?
Yeah.
When did you get kicked out the first time?
Well, it was in 2002.
And what happened with that?
Well, they said I went too far with you're soaking in her.
Ugh. And what was that? I didn't even want to know.
Well, it's this movie. It's about a guy who runs this new age therapy kind of retreat place sort of thing, you know?
Uh-huh.
And, you know, you go there to take these mineral baths and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Only he's this brutal serial torture killer guy. And basically, he combines the mineral water with the liquefied bodies of his victims in the bath,
God.
And then hot chicks kind of soak in it.
That's so disgusting.
They said it was over the top. And
Yeah, I'm sure they were wrong in your mind.
Didn't even play in Belgium.
Even Belgium wouldn't touch the movie.
They passed.
Wow.
You were going to love the tagline for this flick, though.
For Tool Belt Killer.
Yeah, yeah. You know how Lowe's has their, you know, their thing, their slogan, you know.
Uh-huh. What is it?
Let us help you.
Uh-huh.
The
tagline that's going to be on the poster for this, the Tool Belt Killer.
Yeah.
Let him help you die.
Let him help you die.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that's typically terrible. How did you
get... Hey, that's Hollywood, man. Come on.
How did you get permission to film at a Lowe's?
We didn't actually film at a Lowe's.
Uh-huh.
It was on a soundstage in Iowa.
Okay. And they're cool. Lowe's was cool with the logo and everything. Do you use the Lowe's logo?
That's sort of a bone of contention right now. We were actually, we're having a hard time with that right now, and we also wanted to do this tie-in with Lowe's, too, but they're being pretty reluctant.
Yeah, I could imagine maybe Lowe's might not love the premise that if you go to use one of their coupons, you might get murdered.
Well, yeah, they're being kind of hard-assed about it, so...
Gee, I wonder why.
I don't know. We're hoping we get something going Hardee's, maybe, like a Belty burger or something.
What's that?
A Belty burger from Hardee's, maybe. We could get that rolling.
So who would want to eat, though, after, like, a... See, this is the problem I have, is that I like horror movies.
You hate Hollywood, is what it is.
No, I don't hate Hollywood.
It's Hollywood.
You know... But it just seems like all the movies now are not even horror movies. They're like torture movies.
Well, no. It's not, see, your problem is you can't look beyond the graphic stuff that you're seeing and realize that it is, like I said earlier, Hollywood holding the mirror up to the audience.
Well, if,
the internal struggle of
please,
the viewer
okay,
on the screen.
Please tell me how this is representative of that.
Haven't you ever, I don't know, have you ever been annoyed with a boss or an employer or something or, and it sends you into this rage inside, right? You know, you're just, you want to let it out somehow.
Uh-huh.
You come to see one of my flicks.
Mm-hmm.
And it's coming out on the screen just the way you envision it. And don't say it's not. I mean, don't say that you haven't wanted to hacksaw off the limbs of your boss.
No, I haven't.
Or your dad.
I haven't.
Or those kids from school that picked on you because you were rich.
I have no idea. You just are really, you're way off base on this one. I've never wanted to do that.
So anti Hollywood, and I guess it's just not Hollywood's just not your thing.
Uh huh. Well, how long have you been out in Hollywood?
I was out there for about 10 years.
And where are you now?
I'm in Newbridge, New Jersey.
You're in Newbridge now.
Yeah.
How long have you been in Newbridge?
About 2 months.
You've been back for 2 months?
Yeah. No, I moved here.
Oh, you didn't grow up in Newbridge?
No.
So you live in Newbridge now.
Yeah, yeah.
Why do you live in Newbridge? What made you pick Newbridge?
I actually grew up in Westbridge.
Oh, you grew up in Westbridge?
Yeah.
That's fancy.
Yeah. See?
Uh-huh. You and Daddy?
Daddy had me bus to the poor section of town so I would build my character.
Uh-huh.
And they all made fun of me.
You're really a little twisted, aren't you?
I'm not twisted at all.
I mean, these movies are just really far out there.
You know what's even further out there?
What?
My next film.
What is that?
I actually want to run it by you.
Uh-huh.
It's called Hang the DJ.
Hang the DJ.
You know that Smith song?
Yeah, I do.
It's
Panic.
It's kind of inspired by that.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's about this this DJ who's getting stalked by this maniac guy whose father was killed by a DJ back in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
This DJ threw a record out into the crowd at this dance as like a surprise.
Uh-huh.
And it hit the kid's dad right after the kid was born.
Uh-huh.
Hit the kid's dad right in the jugular vein.
Right in the what?
In the jugular vein.
the jugular vein?
Jugular vein. What?
Spell it.
Stutter?
Spell it. Yeah. No, you didn't stutter, unfortunately for you. If you would have stuttered, you might have said the word the right way.
What, vein?
No, say the word before vein.
J-
juggler fame.
Spell it.
Like the juggler, J-U-G-G-L-E-R.
No, well, it's jugular.
No, it's not. What?
Spell
it.
J-U-G-U-L-A-R.
You're off your rocker. So anyway, the dad bleeds to death right on the dance floor.
Yeah.
So the son goes nuts, you know, and his whole mission in life is to murder all the world's DJs.
All the DJs in the world.
Yeah, and I was wondering if you'd want to star in it.
Who would I play?
You'd play yourself.
Maybe. No. I don't
know. You've got to do it.
I really don't feel like being a part of these movies.
You've got to do it. You know why?
Why?
Because it's a documentary. You're already starring in it.
What do you mean by that?
You'll find out soon enough. Yeah, you'll find out soon enough.
Oh, I hate...
Hang the DJ.
You know what I hate? The fact that you're just glorifying the worst kind of... just the worst kind of stuff. Like, you've got this guy... Why is the father in Tool Belt Killers not the hero?
Because he's trying to take away the one thing that
no.
he loves.
Okay, yeah, well, you know what? Maybe...
Just like all DJs try to take away the one thing that everyone else loves.
And what's that?
Music.
Oh, so you want me to...
Talking.
You want me to
talking.
Play... You want more music.
Yeah.
So that's why you have all the DJs getting killed in this movie.
Well, at least one of them.
Why would you be mad at me?
You'll find out soon enough.
Oh, I kind of don't know
what... Hang the DJ.
Wow. That turned into a whole interview. Wasn't expecting that. A little bit of Tool Belt Killer.
No, yeah, that's right. Best show on WFMU back again. Another Tuesday night installment. We are on our first show of the post-marathon excitement. We just heard Richard Harris from The Yard Went On Forever, The Hive. The Yeah Yeah Yeahs before that from their new record coming out soon, Gold Lion. We heard that on their CD single of the same name. And the song before that, The Cuts. Could that have been any hotter? The Cuts, From Here On Out, the name of the album on the Birdman label, I'm Not Down. That is hot stuff, Jack. Human Host. They've got a new album called Exploding Demon. We heard Mold Lungs from Human Host on the MT6 label. Crush Butler, Jesse Hector. You know him. Love Is All Around Me from the Uncrushed CD issue of the heavy-duty stuff from the early, from the late 60s and early 70s, 69 to 71. And starting us off, Two for Tuesday, Part Chimp from their new record, I Am Come. Two for Tuesday, we heard Back At You. Back At You. Ha 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 ha. Is that what it is? Huh? And War Machine. Good new releases there. Best show back again each and every Tuesday night.
doing our thing. Thanks again to everybody who pledged during the 2006 marathon. We reached our goal. I appreciate it. FMU, you're on the air.
Tom.
Yes.
It's Steinberg.
Hey, Steinberg. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Oh, my goodness. I almost took you for granted there. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah. I've been kind of on the run.
Not since the rap battle.
Yeah, exactly. And can I just say something right there?
Sure.
About the battle. I went into it a little cocky.
Into the rap battle?
Yeah.
How so?
Well, I had beaten John Junk a week earlier.
Yeah.
And I had just been, you know, just really cocky. And I went in there thinking I beat him, and I ate my humble pie.
You did. You got, I got to say, Ted Leo brought it. I don't think you expected him to bring it the way he brought it.
No.
And he did because bring it.
Exactly.
You got your bell rung a little bit.
So, like a week after that, I think it's when it kind of hit me. You know, like, I'm not ready for fame.
Mm-hmm.
So, I just had to get away from it all.
So you kind of
mm-hmm.
You kind of pulled out of the game.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean to say?
Exactly. And I just got in my car, and I drove.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a license, but whatever.
So you drove even though you don't have a license?
It was revoked.
Whose car?
My own car. I mean, I still use it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the point. All right. I just kept driving for, like, days, and the car broke down in the desert.
Okay.
And I spent a lot of time there.
Just kind of doing what? Thinking?
Thinking, writing rhymes. I met this guy.
What was his name?
Good question. He didn't really have a name. Uh-huh. He just kind of went by an utteral grunt.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, like how? Like, well, give me an example of his grunt. Okay.
So, he was just, like, the smartest man I've ever met.
And so, how long were you out there with him?
For about 2 weeks.
So, it was you and this guy. And he was just grunting at you.
He spoke English. He just went by a grunt as his name.
He was deep. Okay. Oh, so he spoke English, but you just didn't.
He was deep.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just really awkward because I had been used to, like, living the high life, you know?
Uh-huh.
And he really brought me down to earth, and he taught me a lot of things. He gave me this stuff to, can I say smoke?
Yeah, well, you just did.
Yeah, he gave me a peyote.
Uh-huh. So
I found out it was peyote afterwards, but it was amazing.
Really?
Yeah.
So
Have you ever?
No, I've never done peyote.
Well, let me just tell you, I'm against the drug use.
Sure.
You know, adamantly. But that's not a drug. That's a key.
It's
opening your mind.
Uh-huh. So you felt you had your mind opened.
Yeah. But I kind of had to leave, you know? Something was calling me back.
Calling you back to
New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I just had to get out of there and just drive, and I came back, and I'm just back and better than ever, Tom.
Really? Do you feel like you have new things that you didn't have before? Like
exactly.
New
I've discovered all this. What?
Like new tools in the toolbox, so to speak?
Yeah. I've discovered all this new music, and I'm putting it to use in my rhymes. And I haven't been able to get my hands on any peyote. And trust me, I'm trying.
So you're trying to find this stuff again.
Yeah.
Maybe you might want to just have learned from it and then not have to keep going back to it. You know what I mean? Take what you got from it as a life lesson and then don't keep revisiting.
Anyway, I have a rhyme tonight.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, in my discovery of new things, I've come to realize the power that certain people have. Maya Angelou. Spike.
Maya Angelou. Okay, sure. Maya Angelou, and then...
Spike,
not the Spike.
Yeah, and Ravi Shankar.
Wow. So these are your new influence. Are they going to now affect your work? Those are not your spiritual signposts.
I don't know what that means.
Well, are those people? What do those people mean to you? The work of those people.
Maya Angelou, beautiful words, you know, she knows the soul.
Okay.
And Ravi Shankar, he transformed the Beatles into the Beatles, you know?
Uh-huh, that's true.
And Spike just...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, I thought I lost you for a second.
No. He's just amazing. Have you, you've talked to him like week after week. I don't see how you're not blown away.
By Spike?
Yeah.
Not too hard not to be blown away by Spike.
You're crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Because he doesn't somehow, affect me. Yeah, I'm gonna say I think you might be wearing the crazy hat.
Crazy hat? Anyway, I wrote a song about each of these.
Okay.
But I think for this show, it's best if I do the song about Spike.
All right, I'd love to hear the song. You wrote a song about Spike?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this I gotta hear.
All right. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm definitely ready.
All right. He's Spike, and he's number one. He's a can't-stealing, scare-chasing son of a gun. He's Spike, and he's the king. He's a leather-wearing, whip-cracking potty machine. His voice is spooky. He sounds like Droopy. Says he looks like Theo, but his mind is loopy. No one can fake this, so don't mistake this. He's just searching for his love, Debbie. Now I'm in nature. He's got a dungeon of pain, whips and chains to mad sex games. It's hard to explain because I don't frequent the sex games. I still love this fellow. It makes me mellow when Tom kicks off the show with a why hello. He's Spike, and he's number one. He's a kiss-stealing, scare-chasing son of a gun. He's Spike. And he's a king. He's a leather-wearing, whip-cranking potty machine. He can't roll the town, being chased by chicks. Insert for doo-wop records and horror flicks. From an elderly couple to a kid on a bike. All the people around chant, Spike, Spike, Spike. He spots the villain. You know that crook won't win. Breaking into strangers' cars earns you discipline. He gives a gimp smack. You hear his whip crack. Smacks the cook on the bottom. Hit the road, Jack. He's Spike. And he's number one. He's a can't-stealing, scare-chasing son of a gun. But ecstasy's deeper. Through the zipper on his mask, through the phone speaker, Spike shows a sign of his soul. He chooses to hide from his soul. Is that his goal? To expose society as a whole? He's Spike, and he's a king. He's a leather-wearing, whip-cracking potty machine. Done.
Wow. Holy moly. I never thought Spike... would get captured. Like I do hear a new influence in your rap, though, that middle section there, that bridge.
Yeah.
A little
That was kind of
it was kind of heady.
That was written by
Oh, he helped write that part?
Mm-hmm.
That was some heavy stuff there, buddy.
Yeah. I don't really know what it means.
Uh-huh. Yeah, wow. That I got to hand it to you. You have taken it to the next level.
Aw, thanks.
You people think you're like a one-trick pony, that you do your raps about the dollar store and all that stuff. But you now have dug deeper. You've reached some these are some deep waters you're swimming in.
Thank you.
I think people are going to have to reevaluate MC Steinberg as a two different eras of MC Steinberg if you continue on this path.
But I don't want to force myself down people's throats, you know?
Sure.
So I'm not going to be just calling in every week. I'm going to wait till I have, you know, something to prove.
All right. I love it. You keep going, buddy.
Thank you.
You keep going. I salute you, MC Steinberg.
And I think Tom rolls.
Oh, thank you. You're too nice. You have a good night.
You too, Tommy.
Bye. FMU, you're on the air.
Okay, enough of the monotonal hijinks there. Tommy, fantastic marathon. We really enjoyed it, man. We thought you were terrific. And there's one thing I'd like to congratulate you on.
What's that?
Your photo, you know, the pouting prince. I mean, come on. The pouting prince. I mean, it was so cute. You're sitting there adorably in your throne with your little crown. The pouting prince. I mean, that was so, you're like such a generous dude. You gave that away with buttons and stickers. I mean, the photo wasn't enough. I remember the first time I got an autographed photo from you, I was like in convulsions for like a week. I mean, it was like, I was like going through spastic attacks. I was laid flat on my back. But for you to give on top of the autographed photo the buttons and stickers, you're my man. And we love you, Tommy. And that's why you're on top of the heap.
Why, thank you. Sometimes they go in like a lion, out like a lamb. Sometimes they go in like a lamb, out like a lion. Sometimes they go in like a lamb and out creepy. That one went out creepy. 201-209-9368. A couple minutes left in the show. I should say the best show on WFMU theme contest. Another few weeks to go. We got a bunch of good entries today. We're going to keep it going next few weeks. Go get your information for the contest over at friendsoftom.com. Get your information on that. Next week we will get to the amphetamine reptile article. I'm so tired of pulling these AMRAP records from the library every week. For the last 5 weeks, I have pulled Guzzard records from the library. At what toll does that take on my dignity? You think I want to fish today as the day records out of the wall? Hammerhead? Is that fun for me? No, it's not. We'll get to it next show. I promise.
Time for one final call, 201-209-9368. Thanks to everybody who pledged, in all seriousness. And we're just going to ride this one out. Boop, boop, ba-doop, boop, boop. Boop, boop, boop. I'll take it. I'll take 1 minute of, you know, you can listen to for the next minute, My Bed Music. Thanks, everybody. WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope Worldwide, and the World Wide Web at WFMU.org. The rhythm will be reestablished right now. This was a show I would consider a transitional show. Getting back to the rhythm of doing a 3-hour show without... Do we have anybody to thank? Anybody to thank? We got this prize up here. Come on, we only have a few people in the running. Let's get some calls in here. 800-9-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. No? Everybody, WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope Worldwide, World Wide Web at WFMU.org. Please stay tuned. Bill's going to take you through to 2, then it's Billy Jam, all the way to 6 a.m.